everyone. This is Ellen Rogan, your host of today's edition of Horse's Mouth Advisor Radio. I'm here to interview guests who have great information to help you be more successful in every area of your life, especially your business. Today, my guest is Bob Berg, and I am so excited to have Bob here with us. Let me first give you his official bio. So Bob Berg is a sought-after speaker at corporate conventions and for entrepreneurial events. He's addressed audiences ranging from the size of 50 to 16,000, sharing the platform with notables including today's top thought leaders, broadcast personalities, Olympic athletes, political leaders, including a former president. Although for many years he was best known for his book, Endless Referrals, over the past few years it's his business parable, The Go-Giver, which was co-authored with John David Mann, that has captured the imagination of his readers. It shot to number 6 on the Wall Street Journal's business bestsellers in just 3 weeks after its release and reached number 9 on Business Week. It's been translated into 21 languages, and it's his fourth book to sell over 250,000 copies. Bob is an advocate and supporter and defender of the free enterprise system, believing that the amount of money one makes is directly proportional to how many people they serve. I just love that. He is a founding and current board member of the Club 100, which is a charitable organization focused on helping underprivileged youth. And he's a lover of animals. He's a past board member and board of directors for Safe Harbor, which is the Humane Society of Jupiter, Florida. Now, the unofficial intro is that I've known Bob for more than 20 years. I originally met him when he was speaking at a National Speakers Association meeting on referrals. And Bob's information has changed the way that I do business. Using his information on referrals and then more recently the information in his more recent books have helped me have exponential growth in my business. And the other thing I most want you to know about Bob, that he's one of my favorite people on the planet. This is such a fine human being. So we are so lucky to have him here. Welcome, Bob.
Well, that is so very kind of you, Ellen. You are one of my favorite people, and it's just, it's really an honor to be introduced that way by someone for whom I have so much respect. So thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure. So let's get started, Bob. The title of your book, The Go-Giver, seems to contradict traditional wisdom. Is that intentional? I mean, what's the basic premise of your book?
Well, it is intentional, definitely, because I think the title of a book, just like a good sales letter, if you will, it's the headline, to attract the attention and attract that person who would most likely be interested in the material. And of course, it also has to align with the actual message. It has to be congruent with it, which it is. And it's also, it's a pattern interrupt. So when somebody sees the Go-Giver, what could that be about? A business story. What could that be about? So yes, the intention to come up with an attractive title and one that would make someone think was definitely intentional. The basic premise of The Go-Giver is simply that shifting one's focus, and that's the key, shifting one's focus from getting to giving, and in this case when we say giving, we mean constantly and consistently providing value to others, is not only a nice way to live life, but it's a very financially profitable way as well.
I was, always taught growing up that being a go-getter was really the way to go. Are you saying that that's not really so? I mean, shouldn't we also be go-getters?
Yeah, we love go-getters. In fact, one of my favorite books is by Peter Kine, and the name of the book is The Go-Getter, and that was written about 60 or 70 years ago. It holds a very valuable place in my shelf. We love go-getters because go-getters get things done. They take action, and you and I both know, and Ellen, you've been a very successful author, speaker, planner, business person for a long time, and the people listening to this, they are as well. We all know that all the greatest thoughts in the world, the best intention in the world, is all for naught if action is not put into the mix. So no, being a go-getter is terrific. The good thing is there's actually no natural division between a go-getter and a go-giver. Many go-getters are also go-givers, and every go-giver is also a go-getter. The opposite of a go-giver is not a go-getter. The opposite of a go-giver is a go-taker. That person who feels almost entitled, if you will, to take without having added value to the person, to the process, to the situation. And I think we all know plenty of people like that, and they can even be good people, but they tend to be very frustrated by the fact that they typically don't ever reach the kind of level of success they feel they deserve. And even those times where they might, it tends to be rather short-lived, and yet they also tend to think everyone else is naive. When we say go-giver, we're really, Ellen, just talking about that man or woman who has learned, or perhaps intuitively always knew, that it's that person who can shift their focus, who can move from an I focus or a me focus to an other focus. That's the person who accomplishes the most, not for some kind of, you know, way out there la-la type of reasons, but as we go through the laws in the story, we see that it's actually for very concrete, practical reasons.
Yeah, I think that it also gives people much more of a sense of satisfaction from their work.
Mm-hmm.
Found that as well? That there's just...
Well, it does, and that's why the whole idea is, and you hit it right on the head, is to have much more satisfaction and joy in what you're doing, and at the same time, be a lot more financially profitable as well.
Yeah, so, you know, it's kind of like saying, in some ways, nice guys or gals finish first. You know, it's a nice idea, but I suspect, especially in our industry, the financial industry, that there might be some people that actually think this is kind of naive way of thinking. How do you respond to that?
Well, both. They have a point, and at the same time, let's put it this way, and it's a great question, and I'm often asked that. You know, is this really just saying nice guys, nice gals, nice people finish first? And the answer actually is no. No, that's not what we're saying. Now, don't get me wrong. Being nice is a good thing, and it's actually very helpful in terms of being successful. Let's face it, people who are nice, and in this case I'm using nice and also kind in the same vernacular, people who are genuinely nice people attract people to them. You know, people. It's easier to attract people to you when you're nice, when you're kind. Easier to be successful that way. But that's certainly not enough just by itself. You and I and everyone listening to this, we all know plenty of people in our lives, I'm sure, who we would describe as being simply nice people, who we would also have to describe as being simply broke people. So while nice is a good thing, and it is actually very helpful and very important, in and of itself, it's not enough for someone to be successful. Success is also a matter of doing the correct things in the success process in order to be successful and finish first. And the five laws that John and I provide in the book are simply meant to share those principles. That if an advisor will follow them, utilize them, all five of them together in conjunction, not one, two, or three, or even four of them, but all five, they must be successful. And, you know, we've so enjoyed the feedback from financial advisors who have told us that, you know, many of them, this is what they already do, but the ones who haven't and sort of use this to adjust a little bit have really found great success.
Well, that's a pretty big promise, right, to say that they must be successful?
Yes.
Can you share a little bit with us, A, why you're so confident in that, and maybe tell us about the five laws?
Yeah, well, the reason I can share that with confidence is because it's not as though John and I have, John David Mann, my co-author, my excellent co-author, who is really the storyteller who made the, you know, the characters come alive. I'm much more of a how-to person. John's a great, great storyteller. We didn't make anything up. I remember when the book first came out and we were interviewed, and the book, you know, really took off fast, as you were kind enough to mention at the beginning, and we get all sorts of questions. I'd be asked, well, Pastor, what is it that you and Mann put in this book that's anything particularly new? And my answer was always, nothing. You know, I remember what it was, Jim Rohn, who I know you knew and, you know, was a hero of so many of ours. He always said, beware the person who comes along offering new fundamentals. You know, it's like saying a new antique. It's just not there. And these are principles that have been proven since time immemorial, and they work best within a to the degree that we work within a free market economy, which we don't. I mean, we work within a mixed economy, but to the degree that it's free market, these work, because in a situation where, or in a context where people do not have to buy from you, they do not have to do business with you, there's got to be a way of communicating value to them in such a way that they see why working with you is of great benefit to them. So, yeah, it absolutely works, but there's nothing particularly original about it other than, you know, we put it into a story that is easy to follow, fun, and maybe presents these principles in a way that they're easily learned and duplicated.
Yeah, well, I love the book so much. I love parables. It makes it so much easier for me to learn things. And when I read the book, I couldn't wait to get to the next chapter. It was really oh my gosh, what happens next?
Well,
and actually, I think
that.
I had shared this with you, but through some of the work that I do at a private bank in Chicago, we actually use this as one of our book club books.
Mm.
So everyone at the bank read it, and we all shared how we could use this in our everyday lives.
Really I love that. Yeah, I just take that as such a great compliment. And what was interesting was when the book first came out, the ones who were the early adopters were not the people who needed it. It was the people like you who already were running successful teams, successful businesses, who were already running their lives that way, and they just wanted to, you know, get the word out to their team. And sometimes, you know how it is, it takes that third party, that outside person,
right,
to, so I appreciate that a lot.
Yeah, so I imagine that people often mistake what a go-giver really is. I mean, how does this get confused for people about
this? Well, they do, and this has to do with an understanding of the actual laws and sort of a misinterpretation of that in a sense. Would you like to go through, do sort of a Reader's Digest version of all five laws?
Oh, that'd be awesome.
And we can actually even go through how they get misinterpreted. Well, the first law is the law of value. And the law of value simply says that your true worth is determined by how much more you give in value than you take in payment. Now, this, Ellen, sounds counterproductive. Give more in value than you take in payment? How could that be possible? So what we need to understand here is simply the difference between price and value. Price is a dollar figure. It's a dollar amount. It's finite. It is what it is. Value, on the other hand, is the relative worth or desirability of a thing to the end user or beholder. In other words, what is it about this thing, this product, this service, this concept, this opportunity, this idea that brings with it so much worth or value that someone will willingly exchange their money for that and be ecstatic that they did while you make a very healthy profit. Let's take a quick example from sort of outside the industry or outside the profession with someone who many do a lot of work with, and that is an accountant.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say someone hires an accountant to do their taxes, and this accountant charges just a round figure, $1,000, okay? And that's his fee or his price, $1,000. But what's the value he provides in exchange? Well, he saves the person $5,000 in taxes, saves them 25 hours of work, and provides them with the peace of mind and security of knowing it was done correctly. So we see, first of all, that value is both concrete, the $5,000 savings, and conceptual, the peace of mind, which, as the old credit card commercial said, is priceless. So what this accountant did was give well over $5,000 in value in exchange for $1,000. He gave more in value than what he took in payment. So the customer, the client, comes away feeling great, and the accountant made a very healthy profit, which he should. Well, as an advisor, that's the same kind of relationship you want to have with everyone with whom you do business. You give them such a unique and exceptional buying experience, combining this with the excellence, consistency, attention, empathy, and appreciation, and great, that everything that you provide to that person, they come away from any transaction and or relationship with you thinking, wow, this is terrific. They got a lot more than what they paid for, while of course you make a very healthy profit. And this happens due to focus. It's making sure that rather than your focus being on, you know, selling a certain amount or qualifying for this or making a certain fit or what have you, that's the end result, but your focus is on providing exceptional value to this person, which is why we say that money is an echo of value. It's the thunder to value's lightning, which simply means that the value comes first, and the money is simply a natural and direct result of the value you've provided.
I love that, an echo of value. That's great.
And that's really law number one. So, you know, being a go-giver does not mean that you don't make a profit. It does not mean that you give yourself away. Not at all. In fact, go-givers tend to be more on the high-end level, where they charge more, but what they're doing is they're providing such amazing, exceptional value in exchange that, you know, you've got a customer or client that feels great about you. And, you know, and that's what you want to do. You want to develop these personal walking ambassadors because they just enjoy the relationship, the value-based relationship so much.
Great. And they tell everybody they know.
Exactly.
Great.
And that leads actually to law number two, the law of compensation. And this one says your income is determined by how many people you serve and how well you serve them. So where law number one says to give more in value than you take in payment, law number two tells us that the more people whose lives we add this kind of exceptional value to, the more money with which we'll be rewarded. So yes, as you give that person that great value and they feel great about you, they're going to continue to do business with you, they're going to refer you to others, they're going to become your personal walking ambassador, your centers of influence that really just connect you on a wonderful high level with others, and that's, you know, that's going to be your income. And in the story, Nicole Martin, one of the mentors, said to Joe, the protege, law number one, the law of value, well, that represents your potential income, but it's really not enough to just provide great value to one person. It's also, your income is really a function of impact or reach. So, you know, law number one represents your potential income, law number two represents your actual income. We could say that exceptional value plus significant reach equals very high compensation.
Great.
Law number three is the law of influence, and this is, of course, a key one as well. The law of influence simply says your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. Now, again, this one sounds counterproductive at best and perhaps downright Pollyanna-ish at worst, and yet all top producers operate this way. Now, when we say, let me qualify this, Ellen, if I may. When we say place other people's interests first, of course, we don't mean you should be anybody's doormat, that you should be self-sacrificial or a martyr in any way. No, it's simply this. As Sam, the financial advisor in the story, told Joe, the golden rule of business, of sales, of networking, what have you, is simply that all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. And there's no faster, more powerful, more significant way to elicit those feelings toward you in others, from others in a sense, than by, again, really putting that other person's interests first. It means that we temporarily suspend our self-interest. We don't forego our self-interest. We're human beings. We're self-interested creatures. It's how we're able to advance in life. It's how we're able to grow. But we suspend our self-interest and simply, we move from that I focus to other focus and say, how do we make this other person's life, you know, better, easier, richer, more fulfilling, what have you? And this starts, you know, from the beginning, when you first meet that person, whether you meet this person and you're focusing on them and their business as opposed to you and your business, it's meeting somebody at a business social function or a charity event or whatever, and after finding out what that person does, rather than talking about yourself, it's asking them how they got their start in business, what they enjoy most about what they do. If they're in sales, you might ask, How can I know if somebody I'm talking to would be a good prospect for you? Or if they're not directly in sales, the question might be, how can I know if somebody I'm talking to would be a good connection for you or someone you'd like to meet? In other words, what you're doing from the beginning is you're establishing that you are a person of value who is focused on making their life better.
You know, I've seen over the years, I've learned this from you, right? People that refer to people they know, like, and trust and make it about them. And it just, it's really like magic. I mean, people are so shocked because, unfortunately, most people don't act like this, that if you actually take an interest in someone, they think you're awesome.
Yeah, and I can't tell you how many times I've heard it from people who were surprised at that. Now, you and I've known you long enough to know that's just how you are. You don't even probably remember 20 years ago, soon after we met, you referred me to someone else. You connected me with another person to do business, and you probably don't even remember that because that's just who you are and it's what you do. But there's a lot of people who that does not come naturally to, and that's okay because everybody begins where they are based on their belief systems of what they've been taught and what they've experienced. But the people who are able to make their inroads, because remember, again, lots of people already do this. You know, a lot of people listening to this are saying, that's what I already, well, I know you do. That's why you're successful. But there's a lot of people who don't. And those people who can kind of see this and make that shift and then realize these great results, that, you know, that's really what it's all about.
Yeah, and one of the things for the listeners that Bob provides so beautifully are tools, like real specific questions, like what do you ask? So even if this is something you do naturally, maybe there's people in your office you're training, and I've shared this information with newer advisors that maybe need a little help when they're in a networking meeting. They understand this concept. It's not hard for them, but so I'm, again, so grateful for all the resources. Okay, so we're on law number... Let's go to law number
four. That's the law of authenticity. And the law of authenticity simply says the most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. In the story, Deborah Davenport learned a very important lesson, and that is all the skills in the world, the sales skills, technical skills, people skills, as important as they are, and they are, all of them, they're very, very important, they're all for naught if you don't come at it from your true, authentic core. On the other hand, when you show up as yourself, day after day, week after week, month after month, when people get your consistency, when they know who you are and they know that's what to expect, people really feel good about you. The know, like, and trust feelings really accelerate. People crave consistency, and they crave knowing that they're dealing with the right person, because there's a lot of kind of phoniness in a sense in the world these days, and people really enjoy, you know, they appreciate knowing that they know who they're dealing with. On the other hand, when someone is less than authentic, when they're, I guess the correct Latin term would be phonus balonus, then people don't feel good about them. People don't have that trust for them. They don't have the respect for them, and they're less likely to do business with them, and certainly less likely to refer them to others. And I think often that, you know, when people don't show up as themselves, it's not necessarily, Ellen, because they're trying to be phony. It's because they may not have the self-confidence and understanding of the true value they possess, just like Deborah in the story, who kind of learned by accident the value she brought to the marketplace. See, I think most people, well, I think everyone has two types of value. There's intrinsic value just by being born, but there's also what I call market value. And those are your unique strengths, your unique gifts that are marketable. That's the value you bring to the market that makes you unique. And often what happens is people don't realize it because they're just too close to it. You know, we're all subjective about ourselves, obviously. And, you know, whether someone has just natural talent or whether they've put on that 10,000 hours of deliberate practice, as Gladwell talked about in Outliers, or Jeff Colvin talked about in Talent is Overrated, once they have really locked into that and have become that, they may not realize how special it is. And I can't tell you how many times I've coached or mentored someone, and I'm sure you've done the same thing, where they've said or done something spectacular, and I said, wow, that's awesome, that's brilliant. And their response was, oh, no, everybody does that, or everybody knows that. And they weren't being falsely modest. They really had no clue that what they did was special. So it's also very important when it comes to authenticity for us to not only be genuine, but to understand the true value that we genuinely bring to the marketplace. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I think people don't realize when, I call it their superpower.
Right.
So the thing that they do better than anybody else, and it just is what they do so naturally, that it's often things that they don't even see.
They don't, and that's why it's so important to be able to, you know, to have someone, whether it's at work or whether it's someone at home or whether it's someone who's a coach or what have you. And sometimes it's often it's better to have someone who cares, but they're not emotionally attached. Because, you know, it's more likely they're going to be able to actually see from a distance and really grasp what you do.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, and then law number five is the law of receptivity. And, Ellen, the law of receptivity simply says the key to effective giving is to stay open to receiving. Late in the story, the mentor, Pindar, tells Joe, the protege, he asks him to breathe out and hold that breath to the count of 30. Joe tries, but in a very short period of time, he's gasping for breath. He's struggling to breathe. And Pindar says, "What's the matter, Joe? Can't do it?" And Joe says, "No, I can't just breathe out. I've got to breathe in as well." And Pindar jokingly asks, "Well, Joe, what if I was to tell you it's been medically proven that it's actually healthier to breathe out than it is to breathe in?" And Joe just laughed. He said, "Well, that's silly. You can't do one or the other. You've got to do both." Exactly. We breathe out. We breathe in. We breathe out carbon dioxide. We breathe in oxygen. We breathe out, which is giving. We breathe in, which is receiving. Giving and receiving are simply two sides of the very same coin. They work best in tandem. In fact, to focus on just one side of the equation while trying to minimize the other is really an exercise in futility, because let's face it, all giving is made possible because it's also a receiving, and all receiving is made possible because it's also a giving. The key, once again, goes back to focus. See, all the giving in the world, and again, when we say giving, we mean the providing of value to others. All the giving in the world is fine, it's great, it's wonderful, it's terrific, but it's also all for naught if you're not willing to allow yourself to receive in like measure. Because when you refuse to receive, then you're really shutting down the flow. And this typically is a result of someone having an unhealthy relationship with money. And, you know, it's in a sense surprising how often it happens, but in a sense it's not that surprising, because this relationship is on a deeply unconscious level, and it has a lot to do with the messages on money we get from the world, which is very much a lack of focus and so forth. And so, you know, we just really need to understand that if you will focus on the giving and allow the receiving, you know, now you're coming from a very strong place, because you know that your focus has been on the giving of value, you've earned the right, not the entitlement, but the right to receive.
I love it. Yeah, and I think there's some people that have just been brought up that it's better to give than receive, and they're really, as you said, two sides of the same coin, and we have to be able to do both. Because also, when you're not allowing someone, you're not receiving and allowing someone to give to you, you're hurting their ability to feel good from giving, which we all feel good from giving.
Sure, absolutely. So we, you know, if that is a challenge, I'll tell you one of the greatest books I ever read on this topic, which wasn't specifically about the topic, but it certainly covered it in it was perhaps the best I'd ever read on it, was Maxwell Maltz's Psycho-Cybernetics, written in 1960, which really talked about it. It's a fancy title, Psycho-Cybernetics, but really written for the layperson. And I suggest anybody and everybody read this book, because he really talks about how the mind works and is going to allow us only to receive what our beliefs tell us we should be receiving. And again, the unhealthy relationship with money it's on a very unconscious level. You think about, you know, everything from a combination of upbringing, environment, schooling, media, news media, television shows, movie scripts, where so many of the messages we get are messages of lack. I mean, how many times, are people, when they're younger, are they asked, "Hey, when you grow up, do you want to be wealthy or happy.
Yeah.
As though
right.
it's one
like they're
or the
mutually
other.
Exclusive.
Exactly. We call that the treacherous dichotomy or the false dilemma. And, of course, a false dilemma can be defined by the unnecessary use of the word or.
Mm.
Wealthy or happy. You know, nice person or finish first. Giver or receiver. No, it's both. And there's no reason not, you know, for it not to be. But, again, when you think about all the impressions of wealth that we get from all the different sources that you know, make it look as though money is evil or that, you know, rich people are bad. And, you know, just watch any movie, and there's always two types of people in any hit movie. Just watch the movie. There's always two types of people. There are the good people who are portrayed as being poor but happy, right? They're always poor but happy. They're real, right? They're poor but happy. And they're always being taken advantage of, stepped on, pushed around, put down by who? The rich people who are mean and cowardly and have no soul. You know, so we see this all the time. And so we've got to really constantly be aware of this.
And I think it really, for advisors, we see this with our clients, but it's a really important conversation for us to do some self-looking at how
mm-hmm.
this affects us, because this is our industry, is dealing with money all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so hugely important. It's really great. So, Bob, we are kind of running out of time, but we have time for one more question for you. And it's really, like, if you have a final thought on the one thing that people should remember in order to be successful, what would that be?
Oh, gosh. You know, while I'm not sure success is ever any one thing, it's doing, you know, the right things constantly on an ongoing, everyday basis. I think if I was to align one simple message with the lessons from the Go-Giver, it would be to make sure you're understanding that when it comes right down to it, it's never about you. It's always about the other person, and that the really spectacularly successful advisors have almost an obsession with pleasing and providing value to the other person. They understand that sales is not about them, and it's certainly not about the financial products and financial instruments. It's always about the other person and how their lives are going to be affected by it.
Beautiful. So I just took notes and notes and notes and notes on this. I love all this information, Bob. If the listeners want to find out more about you or your programs, where can they go to learn more about you?
I would invite them to just visit my website, burg.com, burg.com. While there, they can download a chapter of The Go-Giver and Endless Referral. They can check out the blog with about 400 archived articles, videos, and business-building interviews. And for those who hold events, my 5-minute video previews on there, and they can connect with me on social media through that homepage at burg.com.
Awesome. There's such great resources there for everyone. So,
thank you.
Bob, thank you so much. And again, any listeners who are interested, you can go to burg.com, burg.com. I am Ellen Rogan, and if you want more prosperity and success tips, you'll find them on my website at ellenrogan.com. That's ellenrogin.com. So until next time, the question to ponder is, how big of a positive impact are you willing to make? I'm wishing you success in every area of your life. And remember, be great and create great every single day. Thank you.
presentation is offered specifically for financial advisors and may not be reproduced, broadcast, or distributed without permission from Horse's Mouth. Unauthorized use, reproduction, or distribution of this material is a violation of federal law and punishable by civil and criminal penalty.
Everyone, this is Ellen Rogan, your host of today's edition of Horse's Mouth Advisor Radio. I'm here to interview guests who have great information to help you be more successful in every area of your life, especially your business. Today my guest is Bob Berg, and I am so excited to have Bob here with us. Let me first give you his official bio. So Bob Berg is a sought-after speaker at corporate conventions and for entrepreneurial events. He's addressed audiences ranging from the size of 50 to 16,000, sharing the platform with notables including today's top thought leaders, broadcast personalities, Olympic athletes, political leaders, including a former president. Although for many years he was best known for his book, Endless Referrals, over the past few years it's his business parable, The Go-Giver, which was co-authored with John David Mann, that has captured the imagination of his readers. It shot to number 6 on the Wall Street Journal's business bestsellers in just 3 weeks after its release and reached number 9 on Business Week. It's been translated into 21 languages, and it's his fourth book to sell over 250,000 copies. Bob is an advocate and supporter and defender of the free enterprise system, believing that the amount of money one makes is directly proportional to how many people they serve. I just love that. He is a founding and current board member of the Club 100, which is a charitable organization focused on helping underprivileged youth, and he's a lover of animals. He's a past board member and board of directors for Safe Harbor, which is the Humane Society of Jupiter, Florida. Now, the unofficial intro is that I've known Bob for more than 20 years. I originally met him when he was speaking at a National Speakers Association meeting on referrals, and Bob's information has changed the way that I do business. Using his information on referrals and then more recently the information in his more recent books have helped me have exponential growth in my business. And the other thing I most want you to know about Bob, that he's one of my favorite people on the planet. This is such a fine human being. So we are so lucky to have him here. Welcome, Bob.
Well, that is so very kind of you, Ellen. You are one of my favorite people, and it's just, it's really an honor to be introduced that way by someone for whom I have so much respect. So thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure. So let's get started, Bob. The title of your book, The Go-Giver, seems to contradict traditional wisdom. Is that intentional? I mean, what's the basic premise of your book?
Well, it is intentional, definitely, because I think the title of a book, just like a good sales letter, if you will, it's the headline, you know, that to attract the attention and attract that person who would most likely be interested in the material. And, of course, it also has to align with the actual message. It has to be congruent with it, which it is. And it's also, you know, it's a pattern interrupt. So when somebody sees the go-giver, what could that be about, you know, a business story, what could that be about? So yes, the intention to come up with an attractive title and one that would make someone think was definitely intentional. The basic premise of The Go-Giver is simply that shifting one's focus, and that's the key, shifting one's focus from getting to giving, and in this case when we say giving, we mean constantly and consistently providing value to others, is not only a nice way to live life, but it's a very financially profitable way as well.
I was, you know, always taught growing up that being a go-getter was really the way to go. Are you saying that that's not really so? I mean, shouldn't we also be go-getters?
Yeah, we love go-getters. In fact, one of my favorite books is by Peter Kine, and the name of the book is The Go-Getter, and that was written about 60 or 70 years ago. It holds a very valuable place in my shelf. We love go-getters because go-getters get things done. They take action. And you and I both know, and you know, Ellen, you've been a very successful author, speaker, planner, business person for a long time. And the people listening to this, they are as well. We all know that all the greatest thoughts in the world, the best intention in the world, is all for naught if action is not put into the mix. So no, being a go-getter is terrific. The good thing is there's actually no natural division between a go-getter and a go-giver. Many go-getters are also go-givers, and every go-giver is also a go-getter. The opposite of a go-giver is not a go-getter. The opposite of a go-giver is a go-taker, that person who feels almost entitled, if you will, to take without having added value to the person, to the process, to the situation. And I think we all know plenty of people like that, and they can even be good people, but they tend to be very frustrated by the fact that they typically don't ever reach the kind of level of success they feel they deserve. And even those times where they might, it tends to be rather short-lived, and yet they also tend to think everyone else is naive. When we say go-giver, we're really, Ellen, just talking about that man or woman who has learned, or perhaps intuitively always knew, that it's that person who can shift their focus, who can move from an I focus or a me focus to an other focus. That's the person who accomplishes the most, not for some kind of, you know, way out there la-la type of reasons, but as we go through the laws in the story, we see that it's actually for very concrete, practical reasons.
Yeah, I think that it also gives people much more of a sense of satisfaction from their work.
Mm-hmm.
Found that as well? That there's just...
Well, it does, and that's why the whole idea is, and you hit it right on the head, is to have much more satisfaction and joy in what you're doing, and at the same time, be a lot more financially profitable as well.
Yeah, so, you know, it's kind of like saying, in some ways, nice guys or gals finish first. You know, it's a nice idea, but I suspect, especially in our industry, the financial industry, that there might be some people that actually think this is kind of naive way of thinking. How do you respond to that?
Well, both. They have a point, and at the same time, let's put it this way, and it's a great question, and I'm often asked that. You know, is this really just saying nice guys, nice gals, nice people finish first? And the answer actually is no. No, that's not what we're saying. Now, don't get me wrong. Being nice is a good thing, and it's actually very helpful in terms of being successful. Let's face it, people who are nice, and in this case I'm using nice and also kind in the same vernacular, people who are genuinely nice people attract people to them. You know, people, it's easier to attract people to you when you're nice, when you're kind. Easier to be successful that way. But that's certainly not enough just by itself. You and I and everyone listening to this, we all know plenty of people in our lives, I'm sure, who we would describe as being simply nice people, who we would also have to describe as being simply broke people. So while nice is a good thing, and it is actually very helpful and very important, in and of itself, it's not enough for someone to be successful. Success is also a matter of doing the correct things in the success process in order to be successful and finish first. And the five laws that John and I provide in the book are simply meant to share those principles. And if an advisor will follow them, utilize them, all five of them together in conjunction, not one, two, or three, or even four of them, but all five, they must be successful. And, you know, we've so enjoyed the feedback from financial advisors who have told us that, you know, many of them, this is what they already do, but the ones who haven't and sort of use this to adjust a little bit have really found great success.
Well, that's a pretty big promise, right, to say that they must be successful?
Yes.
Can you share a little bit with us, A, why you're so confident in that, and maybe tell us about the five laws?
Yeah, well, the reason I can share that with confidence is because it's not as though John and I have, John David Mann, my co-author, my excellent co-author, who is really the storyteller who made the characters come alive. I'm much more of a how-to person. John's a great, great storyteller. We didn't make anything up. I remember when the book first came out and we were interviewed, and the book, you know, really took off fast, as you were kind enough to mention at the beginning. And we get all sorts of questions. I'd be asked, well, Pastor, what is it that you and man put in this book that's anything particularly new? And my answer was always nothing. You know, I remember what it was, Jim Rohn, who I know you knew and, you know, was a hero of so many of ours. He always said, beware the person who comes along offering new fundamentals. You know, it's like saying a new antique. It's just not there. And these are principles that have been proven since time immemorial, and they work best within to the degree that we work within a free market economy, which we don't. I mean, we work within a mixed economy, but to the degree that it's free market, these work, because in a situation where, or in a context where people do not have to buy from you, they do not have to do business with you, there's got to be a way of communicating value to them in such a way that they see why working with you is of great benefit to them. So, yeah, it absolutely works, but there's nothing particularly original about it other than, you know, we put it into a story that is easy to follow, fun, and maybe presents these principles in a way that they're easily learned and duplicated.
Yeah, well, I love the book so much. I love parables. It makes it so much easier for me to learn things. And when I read the book, I couldn't wait to get to the next chapter. It was really oh, my gosh, what happens next?
Well,
and actually, I think
that.
I had shared this with you, but through some of the work that I do at a private bank in Chicago, we actually use this as one of our book club books.
Mm.
So everyone at the bank read it, and we all shared how we could use this in our everyday lives.
Really I love that. You know, I just take that as such a great compliment. And what was interesting was when the book first came out, the ones who were the early adopters were not the people who needed it. It was the people like you who already were running successful teams, successful businesses, who were already running their lives that way, and they just wanted to, you know, get the word out to their team. And sometimes, you know how it is, it takes that third party, that outside person,
right,
to, so I appreciate that a lot.
Yeah, so I imagine that people often mistake what a go-giver really is. I mean, how does this get confused for people about
this? Well, they do, and this has to do with an understanding of the actual laws and sort of a misinterpretation of that, in a sense. Would you like to go through, you know, do sort of a Reader's Digest version of all five laws?
Oh, that'd be awesome.
And we can actually even go through how they get misinterpreted. Well, the first law is the law of value. And the law of value simply says that your true worth is determined by how much more you give in value than you take in payment. Now, this, Ellen, sounds counterproductive. Give more in value than you take in payment? How could that be possible? So what we need to understand here is simply the difference between price and value. Price is a dollar figure. It's a dollar amount. It's finite. It is what it is. Value, on the other hand, is the relative worth or desirability of a thing to the end user or beholder. In other words, what is it about this thing, this product, this service, this concept, this opportunity, this idea that brings with it so much worth or value that someone will willingly exchange their money for that and be ecstatic that they did while you make a very healthy profit. Let's take a quick example from sort of outside the industry or outside the profession with someone who many do a lot of work with, and that is an accountant.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say someone hires an accountant to do their taxes, and this accountant charges just a round figure, $1,000, okay? And that's his fee or his price, $1,000. But what's the value he provides in exchange? Well, he saves the person $5,000 in taxes, saves them 25 hours of work, and provides them with the peace of mind and security of knowing it was done correctly. So we see, first of all, that value is both concrete, the $5,000 savings, and conceptual, the peace of mind, which, as the old credit card commercial said, is priceless. So what this accountant did was give well over $5,000 in value in exchange for $1,000. He gave more in value than what he took in payment. So the customer, the client, comes away feeling great and the accountant made a very healthy profit, which he should. Well, as an advisor, that's the same kind of relationship you want to have with everyone with whom you do business. You give them such a unique and exceptional buying experience. Combining this with, you know, with the excellence, consistency, attention, empathy, and appreciation, and great, that, you know, everything that you provide to that person, they come away from any transaction and or relationship with you thinking, wow, you know, this is terrific. They got a lot more than what they paid for, while of course you make a very healthy profit. And this happens due to focus. It's making sure that rather than your focus being on, you know, selling a certain amount or qualifying for this or making a certain fit or what have you, that's the end result, but your focus is on providing exceptional value to this person, which is why we say that money is an echo of value. It's the thunder to value's lightning, which simply means that the value comes first and the money is simply a natural and direct result of the value you've provided.
I love that, an echo of value. That's great.
Mm-hmm. And that's really law number one. So, you know, so being a go-giver does not mean that you don't make a profit. It does not mean that you give yourself away. Not at all. In fact, go-givers tend to be more on the high-end level, where they charge more, but what they're doing is they're providing such amazing, exceptional value in exchange that, you know, you've got a customer or a client that feels great about you. And, you know, and that's what you want to do. You want to develop these personal walking ambassadors because they just enjoy the relationship, the value-based relationship so much.
Great. And they tell everybody they know.
Exactly.
Great.
And that leads actually to law number two, the law of compensation. And this one says your income is determined by how many people you serve and how well you serve them. So where law number one says to give more in value than you take in payment, law number two tells us that the more people whose lives we add this kind of exceptional value to, the more money with which we'll be rewarded. So yes, as you give that person that great value and they feel great about you, they're going to continue to do business with you, they're going to refer you to others, they're going to become your personal walking ambassador, your centers of influence that really just connect you on a wonderful high level with others, and that's, you know, that's going to be your income. And in the story, Nicole Martin, one of the mentors, said to Joe, the protege, law number one, the law of value, well, that represents your potential income, but it's really not enough to just provide great value to one person. It's also, your income is really a function of impact or reach. So, you know, law number one represents your potential income, law number two represents your actual income. We could say that exceptional value plus significant reach equals very high compensation.
Great.
Law number three is the law of influence. And this is, of course, a key one as well. The law of influence simply says your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. Now, again, this one sounds counterproductive at best and perhaps downright Pollyanna-ish at worst. And yet, all top producers operate this way. Now, when we say, let me qualify this, Ellen, if I may. When we say place other people's interests first, of course, we don't mean you should be anybody's doormat, that you should be self-sacrificial or a martyr in any way. No, it's simply this. As Sam, the financial advisor in the story, told Joe, the golden rule of business, of sales, of networking, what have you, is simply that all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. And there's no faster, more powerful, more significant way to elicit those feelings toward you in others, from others in a sense, than by, again, really putting that other person's interests first. It means that we temporarily suspend our self-interest. We don't forego our self-interest. We're human beings. We're self-interested creatures. It's how we're able to advance in life. It's how we're able to grow. But we suspend our self-interest and simply, we move from that I focus to other focus and say, how do we make this other person's life, better, easier, richer, more fulfilling, what have you? And this starts, from the beginning, when you first meet that person, whether you meet this person and you're focusing on them and their business as opposed to you and your business. It's meeting somebody at a business social function or a charity event or whatever, and after finding out what that person does, rather than talking about yourself, it's asking them how they got their start in business, what they enjoy most about what they do. If they're in sales, you might ask, how can I know if somebody I'm talking to would be a good prospect for you? Or if they're not directly in sales, the question might be, how can I know if somebody I'm talking to would be a good connection for you or someone you'd like to meet? In other words, what you're doing from the beginning is you're establishing that you are a person of value who is focused on making their life better.
You know, I've seen over the years, I've learned this from you, right? People that refer to people they know, like, and trust and make it about them. And it's really like magic. I mean, people are so shocked because, unfortunately, most people don't act like this, that if you actually take an interest in someone, they think you're awesome.
Yeah, and I can't tell you how many times I've heard it from people who were surprised at that. Now, you and I've known you long enough to know that's just how you are. You don't even probably remember 20 years ago, soon after we met, you referred me to someone else. You connected me with another person to do business. And you probably don't even remember that, because that's just who you are and it's what you do. But there's a lot of people who that does not come naturally to, and that's okay, because everybody begins where they are based on their belief systems of what they've been taught and what they've experienced. But the people who are able to make their inroads, because remember, again, lots of people already do this. You know, a lot of people listening to this are saying, that's what I already do. Well, I know you do. That's why you're successful. But there's a lot of people who don't. And those people who can kind of see this and make that shift and then realize these great results, that's really what it's all about.
Yeah, and one of the things for the listeners that Bob provides so beautifully are tools, like real specific questions, like what do you ask? So even if this is something you do naturally, maybe there's people in your office you're training, and I've shared this information with newer advisors that maybe need a little help when they're at a networking meeting. They understand this concept. It's not hard for them, but so I'm, again, so grateful for all the resources. Okay, so we're on law number... That was law
four.
Number three. Let's go to law number four.
Go to law number four. That's the law of authenticity. And the law of authenticity simply says the most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. In the story, Deborah Davenport learned a very important lesson, and that is all the skills in the world, the sales skills, technical skills, people skills, as important as they are, and they are, all of them, they're very, very important, they're all for naught if you don't come at it from your true, authentic core. On the other hand, when you show up as yourself day after day, week after week, month after month, when people get your consistency, when they know who you are and they know that's what to expect, people really feel good about you. The know, like, and trust feelings really accelerate. People crave consistency, and they crave knowing that they're dealing with the right person, because there's a lot of kind of phoniness in a sense in the world these days, and people really enjoy, they appreciate knowing that they know who they're dealing with. On the other hand, when someone is less than authentic, when they're, the correct Latin term would be phonus bolonus, then people don't feel good about them. People don't have that trust for them. They don't have the respect for them, and they're less likely to do business with them, and certainly less likely to refer them to others. And I think often that, when people don't show up as themselves, it's not necessarily, Ellen, because they're trying to be phony. It's because they may not have the self-confidence and understanding of the true value they possess, just like Deborah in the story, who kind of learned by accident the value she brought to the marketplace. See, I think most people, well, I think everyone has two types of value. There's intrinsic value just by being born, but there's also what I call market value. And those are your unique strengths, your unique gifts that are marketable. That's the value you bring to the market that makes you unique. And often what happens is people don't realize it because they're just too close to it. You know, we're all subjective about ourselves, obviously. And, you know, whether someone has just natural talent or whether they've put on that 10,000 hours of deliberate practice, as Gladwell talked about in Outliers, or Jeff Colvin talked about in Talent is Overrated, once they have really locked into that and have become that, they may not realize how special it is. And I can't tell you how many times I've coached or mentored someone, and I'm sure you've done the same thing, where they've said or done something spectacular, and I said, wow, that's awesome, that's brilliant. And their response was, oh, no, everybody does that, or everybody knows that. And they weren't being falsely modest. They really had no clue that what they did was special. So it's also very important when it comes to authenticity for us to not only be genuine, but to understand the true value that we genuinely bring to the marketplace. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I think people don't realize when, I call it their superpower.
Right.
So the thing that they do better than anybody else, and it just is what they do so naturally, that it's often things that they don't even see.
They don't, and that's why it's so important to be able to, you know, to have someone, whether it's at work or whether it's someone at home or whether it's someone who's a coach or what have you. And sometimes it's or often it's better to have someone who cares, but they're not emotionally attached. Because, you know, it's more likely they're going to be able to actually see from a distance and really grasp what you do.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, and then law number five is the law of receptivity. And, Ellen, the law of receptivity simply says the key to effective giving is to stay open to receiving. Late in the story, the mentor, Pindar, tells Joe, the protege, he asks him to breathe out and hold that breath to the count of 30. Joe tries, but in a very short period of time, he's gasping for breath. He's struggling to breathe. And Pindar says, what's the matter, Joe? Can't do it. And Joe says, no, I can't just breathe out. I've got to breathe in as well. And Pindar jokingly asked, well, Joe, what if I was to tell you it's been medically proven that it's actually healthier to breathe out than it is to breathe in? And Joe just laughed. He said, well, that's silly. You can't do one or the other. You've got to do both. Exactly. We breathe out. We breathe in. We breathe out carbon dioxide. We breathe in oxygen. We breathe out, which is giving. We breathe in, which is receiving. Giving and receiving are simply two sides of the very same coin. They work best in tandem. In fact, to focus on just one side of the equation while trying to minimize the other is really an exercise in futility, because let's face it, all giving is made possible because it's also a receiving, and all receiving is made possible because it's also a giving. The key, once again, goes back to focus. See, all the giving in the world, and again, when we say giving, we mean the providing of value to others. All the giving in the world is fine, it's great, it's wonderful, it's terrific, but it's also all for naught if you're not willing to allow yourself to receive in like measure. Because when you refuse to receive, then you're really shutting down the flow. And this typically is a result of someone having an unhealthy relationship with money. And, you know, it's in a sense surprising how often it happens, but in a sense it's not that surprising, because this relationship is on a deeply unconscious level, and it has a lot to do with the messages on money we get from the world, which is very much a lack of focus and so forth. And so, you know, we just really need to understand that if you will focus on the giving and allow the receiving, you know, now you're coming from a very strong place, because you know that your focus has been on the giving of value, you've earned the right, not the entitlement, but the right to receive.
I love it. Yeah, and I think there's some people that have just been brought up that it's better to give than receive, or and they're really, as you said, two sides of the same coin, and we have to be able to do both. Because also, when you're not allowing someone you're not receiving and allowing someone to give to you, you're hurting their ability to feel good from giving, which we all feel good from giving.
Sure, absolutely. So we, you know, if that is a challenge, I'll tell you one of the greatest books I ever read on this topic, which wasn't specifically about the topic, but it certainly covered it in it was perhaps the best I'd ever read on it, was Maxwell Maltz's Psycho-Cybernetics, written in 1960, which really talked about it. It's a fancy title, Psycho-Cybernetics, but really written for the layperson. And I suggest anybody and everybody read this book, because he really talks about how the mind works and is going to allow us only to receive what our beliefs tell us we should be receiving. And again, the unhealthy relationship with money is it's on a very unconscious level. You think about, you know, everything from a combination of upbringing, environment, schooling, media, news media, television shows, movie scripts, where so many of the messages we get are messages of lack. I mean, how many times, you know, are people, when they're younger, well, are they asked, hey, when you grow up, do you want to be wealthy or happy?
Yeah,
as though
right.
It's one,
like,
or the
mutually
other.
Exclusive.
Exactly. We call that the treacherous dichotomy or the false dilemma. And, of course, a false dilemma can be defined by the unnecessary use of the word or.
Mm-hmm.
Wealthy or happy. You know, nice person or finish first, giver or receiver. No, it's both. And there's no reason not, you know, for it not to be. But again, when you think about all the impressions of wealth that we get from all the different sources that you know, make it look as though money is evil, or that, you know, rich people are bad, and, you know, just watch any movie, and there's always two types of people in any hit movie. Just watch the movie. There's always two types of people. There are the good people who are portrayed as being poor but happy, right? They're always poor but happy. They're real, right? They're poor but happy. And they're always being taken advantage of, stepped on, pushed around, put down by who? The rich people who are mean and cowardly and have no soul. You know, so we see this all the time. And so we've got to really constantly be aware of this.
And I think it really, for advisors, we see this with our clients, but it's a really important conversation for us to do some self-looking at how
mm-hmm.
this affects us, because this is our industry, is dealing with money all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so hugely important. It's really great. So, Bob, we are kind of running out of time, but we have time for one more question for you. And it's really, like, if you have a final thought on the one thing that people should remember in order to be successful, what would that be?
Oh, gosh. You know, while I'm not sure success is ever any one thing, it's doing, you know, the right things constantly on an ongoing, everyday basis. I think if I was to align one simple message with the lessons from the Go-Giver, it would be to make sure you're understanding that when it comes right down to it, it's never about you. It's always about the other person, and that the really spectacularly successful advisors have almost an obsession with pleasing and providing value to the other person. They understand that sales is not about them, and it's certainly not about the financial products and financial instruments. It's always about the other person and how their lives are going to be affected by it.
Beautiful. So I just took notes and notes and notes and notes on this. I love all this information, Bob. If the listeners want to find out more about you or your programs, where can they go to learn more about you?
I would invite them to just visit my website, burg.com, burg.com. While there, they can download a chapter of The Go-Giver and Endless Referrals. They can check out the blog with about 400 archived articles, videos, and business-building interviews. And for those who hold events, my 5-minute video previews on there, and they can connect with me on social media through that homepage at burg.com.
Awesome. There's such great resources there for everyone. So,
thank you.
Bob, thank you so much. And again, any listeners who are interested, you can go to burg.com, burg.com. I am Ellen Rogan, and if you want more prosperity and success tips, you'll find them on my website at ellenrogan.com. That's ellenrogin.com. So until next time, the question to ponder is, how big of a positive impact are you willing to make? I'm wishing you success in every area of your life. And remember, be great and create great every single day.
Is offered specifically for financial advisors and may not be reproduced, broadcast, or distributed without permission from Horse's Mouth. Unauthorized use, reproduction, or distribution of this material is a violation of federal law and punishable by civil and criminal penalties.